Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm not Tristan Riddell.
And welcome to the Senate floor.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Senate Floor. Yes, this is a Senate Floor and not a filibuster, despite my good friend and co-host Tristan Riddell not being here. He is currently out of town.
I think he's baking a cake for David Fincher. That's what he texted me earlier on. I saw him, he was covered in flour and icing sugar, so fingers crossed the cake's good.
You know what, Tristan? I am heavily judging you right now, if that's the case. Heavily judging you. But in his place is my filibuster co-star, Lee Hutchison. Welcome to the main show once again, Lee. We seem to call on you when trouble arises.
Yeah, the bat signal's gone up. So, yep, here I am, sat in my pants and ready to record.
Yep, and as this is a Senate floor, we're going to keep it to the more generalized topics that we do here on the show versus what we do on the filibuster. So today, being that we've already gotten to May this year, really, I mean, next monthly, can you believe we're already halfway through 2016?
I know, I can't believe it. I think it's been a great year so far. Actually, 2015 was always the year that was billed as the biggest movie era ever. I actually think 2016 and the first 4 months has actually almost beaten it for quality so far.
Right, which is why we decided, since we're already halfway through, or practically halfway through this year, we're going to look back on the first half of 2016 and pick out our top five movies that we've seen so far. And then toward the end, we'll talk about things we may have not liked too much. I haven't seen a lot of duds this year, but you've been to the movies a lot more than I have.
Yeah.
And what we're looking forward to in the back half of 2016. So it's another classic top five show that you all have grown to know and love here on the Senate floor. So without further ado, let's get started on our lists. Lee, I'll let you go first. What is your number five movie of the first half of 2016?
Okay. I've been to the cinema 61 times so far this year. That's a mixture of new movies, old movies. And people might forget that the UK, the way it works here in the UK is we get what you would call your big wintertime movies, the Oscar movies. We get them actually at the start of the year. So movies like The Revenant, Big Short, all these movies come out in January time here in the Oscars. Very few of them ever come out in December here. So we always get them as part of our good time of the year, January. So when I was putting together my list, I originally put in at number five, The Big Short. Now, my top five list is, out of all the films I've seen so far this year, out of the new releases, I've had five out of fives. To put that into perspective, last year, I had 0 5 out of fives out of all the movies I went to see at the cinema. The highest was about 4.5 for things like Mad Max, documentaries like Amy and The 4-7-5. So I was going to pick The Big Short as my first list movie on the list. But I thought, you know what, because that came out in America last year, I'm going to just put that to side. And after Tristan ripped this movie, I am going to put High Rise, the Tom Hiddleston movie, in at number five. I've got to defend this movie. I'm not letting Tristan threaten it like that.
I think that right now Tristan is hearing the Kill Bill siren.
Exactly. That movie. I decided, I was like, I've got to come on his show, I'm filling in for him, and I'm going to put in a bit of a case for the defense with this movie.
I just want you to understand the tirade that will be coming your way when this show comes out.
I mean, Tristan, we've all listened to Tristan and love Tristan, one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. And this guy's threatening to break a movie's legs. Now, I was listening to that going, that's Tristan? Does he kiss the girl with that mouth? I was in shock. But to be fair to him, the first time I saw High Rise, I was lucky enough to see it on a tour where the director was coming round all the different cinemas in the UK, introducing the movie, talking about the movie after the end with some Q&A. Ben Wheatley has done some of my favourite films of the past few years. Kill List, I know you're a big horror fan, Matthew. I think you would love that movie. Sightseers is a really great black comedy. Field in England, not so much for me. High Rise, at first when I saw it, I was like, okay. It's okay, I had some issues with it. But then I went to see it again with a friend and listener of the show, Jamie, and it really clicked for me on the second viewing. So I don't know whether it'll change Tristan's mind to see it again, but it really worked for me this time.
I think he'd rather jump off a cliff, but please, please explain to you why. Please explain to me why it worked for you.
I think a few reasons. I think visually, Ben Wheatley's done a stunning job. I think when you look at the movie, for me, and I mentioned it offline to Tristan, is I'm not surprised in a way it doesn't work for an American audience because it's so inherently British. The film really is a throwback to the 1970s, 80s under Margaret Thatcher. She was a conservative, right-wing politician and our prime minister. And she was loathed, really, outside of the rich establishment. In Scotland, she imposed a thing called the poll tax, which really has caused huge divisions in this country ever since. In the north of Britain, she destroyed the manufacturing plants, coal, so many of these sorts of things. Thatcher was not popular with the working man. So when I watch this movie, I'm viewing it through the history that's so well known here in the UK. I would imagine less so in America. So it really resonated with me, despite the fact I didn't really live it. It was a history that I've experienced and know about. So I really enjoyed it on that level.
So do you think it might just be where you and Tristan differ, might be a cultural thing because we don't have that background?
I think there is an element of that. I do think it is a very divisive film. I can see how people hate it. I genuinely get how someone like Tristan could find it unlikable or unwatchable. But for me, I really do like it. I think the performances are fantastic. Tom Hiddleston, you'll love it, Matt. Yeah, he is strutting around in naked at one point. So there's a plus sign for you. But for me, Luke Evans is actually the star of the show. I think he is absolutely fantastic in this. He's an actor that's popped up in things Fast and the Furious 6. Was it Hobbit. Dracula? The Hobbit. And movies, I'm like, yeah, this guy's all right. But in this movie, he plays a TV presenter who just goes off the deep end. He's got a family in the building and he just loses his mind. And he is one of the highlights of this movie. I thought he was fantastic to watch. I think there are problems with the film. I think when the building almost collapses in on itself in terms of a society, it seems very rapid. However, it is really fun to watch. A lot of the comedy characters in it, Rhys Shearsmith is someone that I find very funny. He's well known in British cult circles. I think people like him, Jeremy Irons, Sienna Miller, I think there's a real black comedy edge that I really enjoy. I find the sense of humour in this movie very disturbed and very warped at times, but I really enjoyed it.
Now you're intriguing me because it's got a cast that I like.
Yeah.
And I like black comedy a lot. So yeah.
Like Jeremy Irons is fantastic. It is a really British style sense. It's very droll. At times it's very surreal. I think it pays. I read the book many years ago when I was a student, like most people probably when they first read High Rise for the first time here in the UK. And I think it's a really good adaptation of a very difficult book to do. I also think the score is amazing and I've had it stuck in my head ever since. Clint Mansell, who's well known doing the Requiem for a Dream score, Moon, he does the soundtrack to this, and I was lucky enough to hear it on my birthday live, and I think the musical themes are very different from him, very upbeat at times, this theme of this building. Also, I guarantee whenever anyone watches this movie, they will have ABBA's SOS stuck in their head. It's worked its way into my running playlist. At one point in the movie, they use it quite interestingly as when Tom Hiddleston as Dr. Lang goes to a party, they're playing a symphony version of SOS. Then as the movie kind of unfolds and everything's going to hell, essentially, there's a kind of Portazoid version of it, where it's very somber, very depressive. So I think it's got a really good unironic use of what could really be classed as quite a cheesy pop song. So I think there's so many elements in this that I find really enjoyable, very different, very unique. I do think it's utterly bonkers. It really is the work of a madman as a source author, and I think it's the work of a insane genius director. The cast is brilliant, and they all throw themselves into the role. I think Hiddleston loses a bit of kind of influence on the movie as it kind of wears on, and Luke Evans becomes a more dominating character. But I think it's so worth exploring. Whether you like it or hate it, I think it is worth seeking out. So don't break its legs. If it's going to be in an American cinema near you, which I think is very rare, check it out. If not, I'm sure it'll end up on Netflix or Amazon at some point soon.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you've intrigued me. I feel like I have to now watch this film to see whose side I'm on.
Exactly, and then you'll have to let us know in a few months' time. We'll have to get you together and decide who the winner of the championship nerd party belt is.
Right, I fear for my life, though, if I side with you.
I know. Just do it the day before you go after your college course. Just do it, just go in. Oh, by the way, Tristan, Lee was right. Bye!
Yeah. Well, I will be checking that out for sure, just because now I have to.
Exactly. Just have to. That's all I'm saying to people. Give it a chance.
As far as my number five goes, I mean, I think this may have potential for crossover, but I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that I recommended on the show a few weeks back. Really took me by surprise. Again, I'm just loving this guy's work. And I spoke very highly of it a few weeks back, and it's the new Richard Linklater, Everybody Wants Some.
Cool.
I think that's an excellent movie. You have to expect certain things from a Linklater film. You just saw this film.
Yeah.
So, much like his other films, it's not really plot-driven. It's an examination of characters over a period of time. And usually it can be set in present day, or it could be like this film and like Dazed and Confused, and it could be set in a certain time period. And that, for me, that adds to the coolness of it. For this movie, it's set in 1980. So it's the turn of a new decade. There's still some 70s influence, obviously, but I mean, I just like the character studies that he does. And it was relatable to me as someone who just went to college that the film focuses on, you know, incoming college students. Now, I was never in a fraternity and I never played sports, but I knew people who were like that. So these archetypes were things that I know, even if I wasn't any of them. I don't know. I can't really explain why it worked for me, but it just did. And I liked spending time with the characters. It's got a killer soundtrack. I mean, one of the things that people might not know about me is that, yeah, as a stereotypical gay guy, I do listen to a lot of, you know, pop divas. But I did grow up with a lot of old music. I, you know, 50s through the 80s was stuff that I listened to when I was a young kid, and it's what my parents listened to. So half the songs, I think all the songs on that soundtrack were stuff that I grew up with. So hearing them integrated to the film just added that authentic 80s quality. And, you know, I was mouthing the words to some of them while I was sitting in the theater trying not to make a spectacle of myself. I didn't see it with too many people, so that helped. But it was just a film that I had a lot of fun with, and I think I will see again at some point. I mean, it's in the middle of blockbuster season, so it's going to get shuffled about. Mm-hmm. But I think when it comes out on DVD, I will see it again. It was a true fun experience for me.
I can actually say I will be discussing this movie, taking a different point of view, much later in my list. So I think this is our one and only crossover. That's my feeling.
So let's moving on to number four. What's your number four?
Lee? My number four is a movie that came out last year in America, Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, yes, Kurt Russell.
If you're going to see one Kurt Russell Western movie this year, see Bone Tomahawk. Well, hopefully it got all the attention. Bone Tomahawk is the one that's really resonated with me. It really got a short shift here in the UK in the cinema. It took about a month for me to actually get a showing that worked with me or was actually going to be showing. It was on for like a day or two here, then it vanished, then it was back again, then all that. So I finally got around to seeing it on the last possible day it was showing at a local indie cinema here in Edinburgh.
I can't imagine the Western genre is huge in Europe.
No, it never really has been. Things like the Quentin Tarantino Westerns obviously get a big...
That doesn't count because that's Tarantino.
Yeah, they get a big thing. But this movie really has... It's kind of dipped in and out, and it was kind of gone before you knew it. But it's really stuck with me. I really, really enjoyed it. It's a movie really of two halves. To set up the story, the 1890s, two grave robbing brothers end up desecrating a Native American burial site. Then one of them is killed and one escapes, and he ends up showing up at this town. So when he turns up at the town, he creates a bit of disruption and he ends up in the jail. The next day, the sheriff, Kurt Russell, wakes up and finds that he has been kidnapped, this thief, and he's also had the town's female doctor. She's been taken away, Samantha. So the sheriff, his deputy, played by the brilliant Richard Jenkins, who is absolutely hysterical in this movie, also joined by Samantha's husband, Arthur, played by Patrick Wilson, and Matthew Fox, who has a relationship formally with Samantha. So they head out into the frontier. Arthur is crippled, so it's a real trek as they have to face potential Indian threats, Spanish Armada, and things really are quite difficult for them on the trail. As the film kind of gets to its climax, for me, I was really enjoying this film. Like, seeing these guys trek in the frontier was visually stunning. I thought the banter between them all was really was fascinating, and watching the little conflicts, and Kurt Russell is so stoically brilliant in this movie. But Richard Jenkins steals the show. He's so droll, he's so amusing. He almost plays that, this guy is so stupid, how did he end up as the kind of the deputy, that dumb deputy role we've seen so many times? But he does it so, so well. But the last act is terrifying. Nearly the entire team out with Arthur kidnapped by these savage Native Americans. They're cannibals, and the sound design, as they use bones as a way to communicate with other people, they put them against their mouth and kind of make a woo noise. I can't describe it very well, but it's very similar to, if you remember Jurassic Park 3, where Alan Grant uses the raptor bone as a communication device.
Yeah. I hope it's in a better way than Jurassic Park 3. Oh, yeah,
and it's genuinely terrifying. The violence and tension is unreal as these Native American cannibals turn on the party. It really is savage, uncomfortable to watch. I love tension in a movie, and I find it something that's very difficult to generate, with so many movies these days dominating where I can almost probably see how the movie is going to end, or we know that these actors have got a contract for 10-15 years. It's sometimes hard to generate tension, whereas a one-off movie like this, you think anyone could die, anyone could lose a limb. It really creates a sense of tension. And I remember just sitting in my seat, and it almost reminded me of when I saw the movie Descent, the Neil Marshall movie. I'm sitting there watching this dark, tense, uncomfortable movie, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this person could die. This person could be severely maimed. I think tension is very hard to do. And when it is successfully done, it's almost unforgettable, that experience you get from the movie. I really think it's a fantastic throwback to the Western genre. I think it's one of the best Westerns I've seen in many a year. I think the combination of almost a horror towards the end is a really fascinating turn. And it's really stuck in with me. That noise alone has resonated with me all these months on. So it's a movie I highly recommend, and one that I think's been on DVD, Blu-ray for quite a while now in America. So I highly recommend it if you're looking for a classic American movie.
It sounds great. You know, Westerns aren't usually my thing, but I love Kurt Russell, and I love suspense tension movies. And
it's right up your street then.
So, I mean, you know, it just sounds like it's a thriller that just happens to take place in Western times.
Oh, yeah, and it uses the background so well, and visually the cinematography is stunning as you see these people on the Western plains just trekking along, walking. It's a long journey to get to where they're going, and you're just blown away by this American vistas.
Yeah, then I will definitely be checking this one out. I look forward to it. And
awesome.
Awesome. My number four is call back to our first show, Lee. My number four is Deadpool.
Awesome.
Yes, I realize it's no high art, and I realize it's kind of an insubstantial comic book movie, but it was fun, and I had much more fun than I thought it would be, than I thought I would, and the marketing was fun, but there was something about the way I saw it the first time. Like, I don't think anybody expected that movie was going to be as big as it was. I think they knew it was going to be, it was going to be well received because, like I said, the marketing was good and everybody was kind of resonating with it. But I remember going to the theater the night that it opened, thinking that, oh, I'm here like an hour before IMAX, and it'll be fine. It'll be fine because this is an R-rated movie, and it's a bit more of a niche crowd. An hour's acceptable. Well, I walk into the mall because the cinema's in the mall, and I see this line forming across the lobby, and it's sticking out into the mall lobby. And I'm like, oh, this is interesting. And then I walk up to get my ticket, and they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, this is the line for IMAX Deadpool. And so I was like, it's a good thing I got there an hour before, because when I got into the theater and we were all sit down, I think it was a sold-out theater. Mm-hmm. There was something about seeing that movie with a sold-out theater of people that were into it that was just really, really fun. And like I said, it's number four on the list because it's a fun movie, but it's not much more beyond that. But it's still a good, fun movie. Mm-hmm. And if you want my more complete thoughts on that, go back and listen to our very, very first filibuster where we reviewed it. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and that's why it's number four on my list.
Awesome. A fine choice.
So let's move on to number three. Number three for you, Lee.
My number three is a movie called Eye in the Sky. I don't know if you're familiar with that one or if it's even come out in the America yet.
Yeah, it has, but I missed it. I wanted to see it.
Well, it's from the director of X-Men Origins Wolverine, Gavin Hood.
That's a great selling point.
Exactly. But like many movies, redemption is a powerful thing, and Gavin Hood creates an excellent movie. The plot basically is a four-pronged movie. I'll set up the four different kind of time frames first. The first one, we have Helen Mirren plays Colonel Powell, a military officer here in the UK that's overseeing a drone program. In Whitehall, probably you'll recognize it as the buildings James Bond works in. Mm-hmm. Alan Rickman is a British general
Is this his official last role?
Yes. Alice in Wonderland is his last official role in a way because it's of his voice, but this is his last acting role. So he plays a British general who is relaying all the information to the British government so they can make decisions. Out in Nevada, Aaron Paul and Gavin Hood are the drone team who are carrying out.
He acts in this, huh?
Yeah, he's got a small role. He plays a military general. Aaron Paul is in charge of the drone mission. And out there in Africa is a young girl who's selling bread. So basically, this movie is a morality play. It essentially is like watching a piece of theatre. So we watch what's unfold, that a terrorist is in a small house. They're armed. They've got explosives, they've got suicide vests, they're ready to go. But within the kill site of this bomb is a little girl selling bread. The chances of her surviving are 40%, which is too low. So what we see unfolding between all these four different plots is the morality choices. Is one life worth saving the lives of 100 people that could die in a terrorist attack? Is bombing them the right idea, or is letting the terrorists carry out the bombing and the British and Americans can win the propaganda war better than them bombing this place and letting one girl die and be a poster for Western imperialism?
Now, that sounds really interesting, but I could see how, you know, a movie based around a morality play can feel stretched out over in the course of an hour and a half to 2 hours. Now, do they manage to keep it pretty fresh and moving?
Yes, it's very tense because I'm watching this movie and I watched it with my friend and we're sitting there, we're both feeling that. You know that when you're feeling uncomfortable, you're sitting in that seat. You're sitting there going, oh, God, just please buy the bread. Can someone buy the bread? Well, someone just goddamn buy the bread. It's so tense to watch. Good. So the movie essentially comes down to how fast this girl can sell bread. This lovely little African girl is just selling bread just next to the corner of where's about to be struck by a drone. All the actors bring something really different. Helen Mirren brings this determined role. It's worth doing. We've got to do it. We've got to do it. Alan Rickman is almost the go-between between all these branches of the government. And it's something I've mentioned before that I love watching a logistical thriller in a way, where we've got this British government and they're like, okay, oh, I don't know. I don't want to be the one to make the decision to do the bombing. Why don't we ask the State Department? So they ask the British State Department. And they go, well, we should really run it past the Americans. And at one point, they get in touch with the American Secretary of State, who's at a ping pong competition in Asia. And the British people call and go, are you okay commissioning this drone strike? And they're like, of course, we've already given the permission. So it's really all about the bureaucracy between all these different agencies and governments. And Alan right. Rickman really ties them together. So if you're really into logistical thrillers between, and I've mentioned before, I love watching the difference between British and American governments in movies like this. Likewise, for example, in the movie In the Loop, I think it does it fantastically well. This is just as great in a way. Aaron Paul is fantastic as this drone pilot who's really conflicted. He is going to be the one that all these characters are behind him debating, do we pull the trigger? Is this girl's life worth the loss to take out this terrorist? And he's the one that's got to make the decision. So he's got the pressure on him. He's the one with his finger on the trigger. It really is a fantastically tense movie. It's also got some great moments of levity. Alan Rickman, you know, sadly has never been better. He's so fantastic in this role. The humour is very British, but I think it would translate well to an American audience. And I guarantee anyone that will watch this will just be as nerve-wracked as I was about bread sales.
I definitely want to see it because I saw that preview several times and yeah. I knew what it was about. And it's got a killer cast, and if what you say is true and they're able to keep that level of suspense and, oh, yeah. and you know, hand-wringing throughout the movie, then that's a good thing. I mean, because like I said, that premise has the potential to get played out in half an hour.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it doesn't, which is fantastic, and I look forward to seeing that for sure.
Absolutely. Let me know what you think when you see it. As I say, even if people aren't a fan or it doesn't sound like up their street, please see it as a tribute to Alan Rickman. He's fantastic in it. And when you're watching him in this final scene, you're thinking, oh man, I can't believe that he's gone.
Did they dedicate the movie to him?
The movie is dedicated to him, and I think it's a fantastic tribute to him. It's not like they're dedicating Alice through the Wonder Hole or whatever it's called. This movie really, he's fantastic in it. He mixes tension, levity, gravitas, everything so well that we associate with Alan Rickman. And let's see, if this is to be his final scene, then it's a hell of a final scene to give him. It really will keep you stressed, anxious, uncomfortable till the end. And it really will have people debating after the cinema. Did they make the right decision? Was what that happened a good thing, a bad thing? And it doesn't flinch away from making a tough call. And it could easily be a movie that focuses on patting ourselves on the back by making an easy choice ending, and it doesn't, and I applaud it.
Good. I really look forward to seeing that then. That'll be on DVD soon enough.
Great.
Speaking of tense and speaking of thrillers and speaking of all that good stuff, and I love a good horror movie, I love a good suspense movie, and by God, I got one this year. And we had no idea it was coming until January because them talking about 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Awesome.
This movie took all of us by surprise because, like I said, we didn't know until January we were getting it this year. And I have to say, I mean, I enjoyed the first Cloverfield. It's a fun monster movie, and it's one of the found footage ones that works okay. This one I liked a lot better, though. And I think it's because it's a smaller film. It manages to maintain tension and suspense throughout, and the performances of the three characters that we follow through the film are so good, especially, you know, John Goodman as this psychopath and Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who, you know, was an actress that I always liked in things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really liked her in Scott Pilgrim. I even liked her in the the Thing prequel that came out back in 2011. Not a lot of people like that film, but I really did as a fan of the original, and I thought she gave a great performance. But here she really impressed me because, you know, I've seen a lot of horror movies in my time, and I'm very familiar with the final girl, the survivor girl stereotype. And to me, I mean, her performance, she took like some of the best qualities of several final girls that I like. I thought she had, you know, I thought she had Sigourney Weaver's toughness from the first Alien. I thought that she had, Jamie Lee Curtis's ingenuity from the first Halloween. It was stuff that I had liked in previous movies that they kind of threw into an amalgamation in this character. I thought she pulled it off spectacularly. A lot of people are split on the ending, but to me, it's kind of like a Twilight Zone. And I think that I'm okay with the Cloverfield series becoming this, actually. They do stick in a sci-fi element at the end. I won't spoil what it is in case people haven't seen it. But, you know, I do feel that that maybe was a thing that they felt that they had to do because they put Cloverfield in the title. And that comes with a certain level of expectation. Some people felt that it was out of place. But like I said, to me, it was a Twilight Zone ending. Because Twilight Zone always ended with something weird. Like something truly strange. I don't know if you've ever watched a bunch of Twilight Zone
episodes. Oh, yeah. I loved the Twilight Zone Outer Limits as a kid.
Because then you know, like, all of them end strangely. Like, the good ones especially, they have this ending that you don't really expect. It's a third act twist, whatever. And I thought they did that very well. I was satisfied. And part of me likes the fact that if we get a Cloverfield 3, it's probably going to be a whole different story. But I almost wouldn't mind sticking with this one and seeing what happens to her next. But you know what?
Yeah.
The ending that they gave us was very, very good. And it was a tense little thriller. It's, you know, it's a short film and it needs to be because there was just the perfect amount of time to stretch that story out. And I was truly impressed. I want to see that film again. So.
Yeah, I thought it was a fantastic movie. I really, really enjoyed it. I think Mary Elizabeth Winstead has been one of those people, like, ever since Scott Pilgrim, I fell so hard in love with her watching that movie that she has got a free pass for life. She's one of those actresses that I will see anything she's in, whether it's that dance movie she did years ago to attend Cloverfield Lane. I really think it's a fantastic movie. And I actually would recommend to you, Matt, it would make a good double bill with a movie called Faults. I think it's available on the West Netflix in America. It's a movie where she plays someone that has psychological issues and she needs a deprogrammer to come and break her out of this cult-like trance. So I really recommend, like, if you want to watch Cloverfield Lane and fancy doing it as a double bill, Faults, which is a really fantastic companion piece.
Yeah, that sounds great. I would love to do that. But like I said, took me totally by surprise, had no idea it was coming this year, had no idea it would be as good as it was. So if you haven't seen it, it's been out for a few months, so try not to read anything about it before you see it, because you just need, it's one of those films that you need to see unfold.
Yeah, and I mean, I enjoyed the twist. I had no issues with that whatsoever. When you watch a movie like this, you're kind of expecting something that's a bit of a left field turn. So it's no surprise. It's not like it's something that's done it for the sake of it. That's just part of the world. Sometimes the rug is pulled from underneath you like that, as you say, with Twilight Zone, Outer Limits.
I just think that some people aren't familiar with that style, because I heard some people say, it becomes a whole different movie in the last act. And I'm like, well, that's kind of what Twilight Zone does. I mean, like, you think the episode is about one thing. Mm-hmm. It's really this other thing that's going on.
Absolutely. It's just, and I'd be really surprised if some people turned it down like that. Because they thought it's two different movies. In a way it is, but that's part of the joy of it. It's, you know, going into a movie and not knowing where the third act's going or coming from, or it keeps you guessing throughout the movie, it really does hit the mark.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree. So we're getting down to the really nitty-gritty good stuff. So, Lee, what is your number two on your list?
Mine is Everybody Wants Some.
And this is the one you just saw because it just came there.
Yeah, it only came out here yesterday in the UK. And it feels like it's been ages waiting for me. For me, a Richard Linklater movie coming out is akin to Christmas Day. I was so excited yesterday. I got home from work and I rewatched Dazed and Confused. I was watching some Richard Linklater videos on the YouTube app on my TV. I was just getting myself really excited for it. It's probably my version of singing some Christmas carols. And I went in I had high hopes. And it's not, I'm not one of those people that goes into a movie thinking, I think I'm going to like a movie, but if I don't like it, I will still be honest about it, because you have to be true to yourself. You have to be true to people that are sometimes even just listening to your opinions.
Right, so, but I saw this before you and messaged you that I think you'd like this.
And I had no doubt about it. I thought I was going to like it, but I didn't expect to love it as much as I did. I really, really enjoyed it. It took me back, even though this is a movie that's set in 1980s Austin with a bunch of baseball players. What works so well with Richard Linklater movies at their best, whether it's the Before trilogy, Boyhood, Dazed and Confused, Slacker, is that they're so universal in a way. We watch so many movies, and whether it's something like Bone Tomahawk, where I'm never going to experience facing down cannibal Native Americans, for example, or whether it's Deadpool, I'm not going to get special powers, but I can relate to people's conversations. I've had them. My job involves a conversational style. So it's something that I'm used to.
We were all young, university-aged kids at one point.
And I was watching it, and I was like, it took me back, even though there's decades difference, thousands upon thousands of miles of difference, it took me back to what it felt like for me. I grew up in a village, and then I came and lived here in the capital and studied. And there were so many bits where there's a part where, like, they're at three different clubs over three different nights. And they're like, what are we doing? Like, one night we're with the punks, then we're playing Cotton Eye Joe with the cowboys, and then they're at their kind of retro
disco
night. Yeah. And we did that. Like, I look back, and I said it to my girlfriend one time. I was like, how did I afford to go out all those nights in a week, all the time in a row? How did I afford it? How could I still get up the next day for class and it wasn't a big deal, or continue things the next day? It was just so, it was so relatable. There'd be times where they were in the clubs and I was like, that's what we were like. We were, you know, young guys that we lived in the countryside. We had high school sweethearts, and now we were kind of free to enjoy a capital city with all the excitement it had. I remember our early first few nights here in the city was, we were out in the town looking to meet girls. Like, we couldn't believe our luck. It was such an exciting opportunity from going from countryside living to city living. And I was just watching them going, oh man, that reminds me of me and my friend. Oh, that reminds me of, and I've lived with like flats with a bunch of guys for better and worse. And there's times, and the competitive thing is there, that kind of passive-aggressive thing. That was all there. And I didn't expect to relate to this as much as I did, and that surprised me. I thought this was going to be a Richard Linklater movie, perhaps akin to maybe a School of Rock or Tape, for example, where it would be something that I would really enjoy, but I wouldn't really relate to it. And I really did, and it was so exciting to watch. There was even points when someone like Jake, where he was flirting away with the dance school girl. And I was like, that was the type of girls I was really interested in when I was like 18 and I was in high school. Like, the idea of these girls that were, you know, so into their dancing and, you know, art, that was something that I found really attractive, because I didn't really have that out in the countryside, these cultured women. So it really took me back to those nights and failed attempts where you're out looking to score, you're using terrible chat up lines. And I even did something akin to writing the note that Jake did. And it was really something that brought a lot of smile to me, and a lot of, you know, it really made my heart swell watching this, because I love that about Richard Linklater movies. The plot isn't really important, because life very rarely has a plot, that we have weekends where we do big things or big events happen, but life generally is just kind of about going between one space and the other, talking with friends, talking with loved ones, and that's life. That conversational style is very hard to do, and we've seen it with a lot with perhaps action movies and so on, that everything's all about the set pieces. With Richard Linklater movies, the conversations are the set pieces. It's just all about getting from one conversation to the next.
It makes me wonder how he does it, because like in the Before movies, in this movie, in other movies that I've seen where it's conversational focused, I don't want to say it feels ad-libbed, but it feels like it's ad-libbed in a good way. Like, it doesn't feel like there's a script, but the actors know what to talk about, and they know how to make it feel natural on camera.
Oh, yeah.
Which is something that if that's the way it's made, and I don't know if that's the way it's made, but if it is, I mean, that is fantastic, because, I mean, that is a level of improv that is so hard to do.
Oh, yeah.
It continually fascinates me. That's why I find myself – I'm not as familiar with Linklater as you. I got into him last year. But that's what makes – that's what draws me to him, is the fact that his conversation – I've never felt like there was a more natural conversation on film than some of his works.
Yeah, and it's so organic as well. Obviously, with the last two before movies, he had Julie Delpy and Ethan Hawke helping him with the script. And I had the same thought as you. I was watching this movie. I was like, how the hell can this one guy come up with so much wonderful dialogue that just flows naturally? Where Quentin Tarantino dialogue is so stylized that people don't generally talk like that. So it's much easier to write, I think. Where something where it's to make it so natural to flow, to have these people sound like realistic, real people, relatable people, is fantastic. And there was so many characters in that movie that I just thought were so funny that just could almost steal the scenes at times. Jay Niles, I think, is going to go down as a classic character. He reminded me of Kip from Napoleon Dynamite, and I thought, is that the same guy at one point? I think there's so many characters in there that we can all relate to, see bits of ourselves in, and I really think I thought it was going to be good Linklater, but this is up there with some of the best Linklater as far as I'm concerned.
You made a bold statement for people coming out of the theater. You said you like this better than Dazed and Confused.
I do, yeah. I watched Dazed and Confused before this movie. Just watched it at home. I'm actually going to see a double bill of it next month, where they're showing Dazed and Confused then into Everybody Wants Some. I think I like this movie more than Dazed and Confused, because as much as I enjoy Dazed and Confused, it perhaps was the way I felt it. With Dazed and Confused, it was something I saw on DVD and video, and it was kind of always something that was there thereabouts.
Is it the novelty of Everybody Wants Some that you like, or do you think that – I wonder how you'll feel in when Everybody Wants Some has 20 years like
exactly.
Dazed and Confused does.
I saw Dazed and Confused about 2003, so only 10 years really after it had come out. So it was still – relatively new in the grand scheme of things when I first saw it, but it never really was one that connected with me as such, where I enjoyed the characters. I always think of the TV program that I love so much, Freaks and Geeks. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No, I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
I watched almost Dazed and Confused, and it was around the same time as I kind of was watching Freaks and Geeks. So Dazed and Confused always paled in comparison to Freaks and Geeks. So while I enjoyed Dazed and Confused, I've never loved Dazed and Confused like some people do. Whereas watching Everybody Wants Some, I've not got the Freaks and Geeks really comparison. That's not something that's competing for my attention at the same time. So it really stuck with me a lot more, this Everybody Wants Some. Time will tell whether I still feel the same way. But for just now, it's a movie I really did love, and I really want to go see it again.
Yeah, you'll have to tell me how they work back-to-back in that double feature.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good – because obviously it's a spiritual companion that we see it as the end of Term and Dazed and Confused, and then it's almost a spiritual companion as well to Boyhood. Boyhood ends with this guy going into college for the first time, meeting his male and female flatmate. And then we pick up this movie as this guy's moving into college for this first day, and he meets his flatmates. So it really does work really well in sync, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I knew I was going to go see it when I saw the trailer. I mean, because it seemed like fun. And then I love that scene in the room where they're all smoking the bong and trying to do telepathy with each other.
Yeah. I mean, sharks have tails.
Yeah.
Good point.
Exactly. It reminded me of, I don't know if you've ever watched, but it reminded me of the circle scenes in that 70s show. Like, it was fun. It was just fun. And it was fun dialogue. And I knew, like I said, I knew people like that. Even if I wasn't that, I knew people like that. So I want to see it again, for sure.
Cool.
Okay, my number two is something that I've talked about on either Senate Floor or Filibuster before, and I know it's a movie that some people feel is overrated and some people may not think as highly as I do, but I was really kind of surprised by it and taken aback, and that would be Zootopia/Zootropolis in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason that I put it so high is because I think that with the renaissance of Pixar, one of the things that Pixar has done very well, and this isn't Pixar, but this is Disney Animation. But one of the things that Pixar has done so well is, it, for me, it's upped the game. And I think it's upped everybody's game with as far as children's animated entertainment is concerned. To the point where something like Zootopia, where I don't think it could be made in a pre-Pixar world. Because Zootopia is not just a kid's movie. It's not just these little animated animals living like humans. Mm-hmm. They bury a morality play inside it, and they bury a very prescient and good one. And something that I think in today's culture, where there's a lot of prejudice and there's a lot of, you know, subtle racism, especially here in America. I mean, you need not look further than the rise of Donald Trump to see that that still exists here in this country. But to present that play in a way where I think, you know, adults are going to get it because it's you see it in there. But I think making entertainment like that for kids, I don't want to sound like I'm on a soapbox here, but I think it's so important and I think it's so cool that they're willing to do that these days, where in kids' movies in the past, you know, it was enough to be animated.
Yeah.
And to have a few songs in there, and, you know, it was something that you stick your kids in front of when you wanted them to shut up and not bother you, right? Here, I think they're actually learning valuable lessons, and I think that not only will parents be entertained, and I think they'll be pleasantly surprised, but the things that it's teaching kids and the things that it's, you know, the questions that I could see the kids asking as a result of this film, I think is important, and I think it's commendable, and I think that whether or not you think the movie is overrated, I think that the fact that it's trying to do something important, and it's a very, I think it's a very well-made film. It's got a good cast. It's got heart, which, you know, is cliche, but it does. It really has genuine emotion and pathos and a wonderful moral at the end of it. So for something like that to come out, to be as good as it is, and to even get made, because like I said, it, you know, not too many people want to make morality plays, but I think that with the higher brow animation and the higher brow concepts of Pixar, people are willing to take chances. And if Zootopia is the result of people wanting to take chances, then I think it's to be commended. So that's why it ends up so highly on my list. And I really hold that those goals in high regard. So.
Awesome. I know it's still getting shown here at least a few times a week, and I just haven't had the chance to get around to seeing it. So I'm sure I'll see it eventually.
Yeah, I mean, even if you wait till Blu-ray, Lee, I think, you know, I hope I haven't talked it up too much. I'm just saying that I think that it's a very well-made film that does what it's intending to do in an entertaining and, for a kids' film, spectacular way.
Awesome. That's high praise indeed.
And before you go to number one, your number one, Lee, because I'm pretty sure your number one is different than my number one, I'll just get mine out of the way. Obviously, if you listen to last week's show, my number one so far is Civil War.
I thought it was going to be Batman v Superman. I'm a bit taken aback here.
Of course. I just wanted to get it out of the way. If you want to hear why, go back and listen to my thoughts on our previous filibuster show. But I'll just say here that it was one of those films that, you know, I was waiting. The second I got out of Winter Soldier back in 2014, it was my most anticipated film ever. And it was one of those few times where, like, 2 years of hype and anticipation did not let me down. I still loved the new film. It blew away everything that I hoped that it would be. And I think it's a success all around. And I hope it continues to be a success as it, you know, as it sticks around here in the box office. Go back and listen to my thoughts on our previous show for that, but that would obviously be number one is Captain America Civil War.
Awesome.
So with that in mind, what is your number one so far of 2016?
My number one couldn't be further away from your one.
Good.
It's a movie called Anomalisa. I don't know if you're familiar with Anomalisa.
You've spoken before, but it's the claymation or the puppet one, right?
Yeah, it's the puppet movie from Charlie Kaufman. It is. I work in mental health, and that's what my day to day job. I do volunteering in and around that field as well. So something that really resonates with me, and I had a conversation with Tristan the other day where he was like, "How do you find the time to go to do all these things and see all these things?" And I find the idea that working with people with mental health issues is really tough. It can be hard to watch people, you know, suffer, have lives where they're fighting adversity every day. And I go to things like the cinema or go for runs, get out to escape things like that.
Yeah.
So when I went to see Anomalisa, I was going in quite blind. I had thankfully managed to not see any of the trailers. I just knew there was a new Charlie Kaufman movie coming out. And based on his track record, that alone convinces me to go through. So this year I've been trying to go in to see more movies more blind. If I don't see the trailer at the cinema, I try and avoid it at home. I just wanted to see and experience movies as fresh as I can. So I went to see Anomalisa. So I'm watching this movie and I'm like, huh. And I'm watching it at the start and it's this kind of claymation puppet style. And I was like, oh, I think, and I kind of knew roughly that was a part of the appeal of it. So I was like, oh, this is a bit surprising. And I'm watching this movie and then I was like, oh, this guy here, Michael Stone, he's got that thick Liverpudlian accent. All right there, mates, what's going on? But then everyone else sounded the same. And I was like, am I imagining this? Tom Noonan voices everyone else, whether it's a taxi driver, whether it's someone singing a song on an iPod, everyone sounds like this actor, Tom Noonan. So everything Michael Stone hears is the same voice. So he's clearly suffering from mental health difficulties. So already this movie is something I can understand, I resonate with. I can look at it and think, oh, this reminds me of things I've experienced and seen. So it catches me in an emotional way, kind of almost by accident. And I think it's visually stunning. This puppet work is like Team America, but for the American Art House Foundation, essentially. And it's so well put together that it almost takes place in this one hotel room that Michael Stone has come to. I can't remember the name of the town. It's a kind of small American city.
Mm-hmm.
So he's come here and he's in a hotel room and he tries to hook up with an ex-girlfriend over the phone and it all goes so wrong. And she also sounds the same. Women, it doesn't matter who, all sound like Tom Noonan. So he's in his bathroom and he hears this woman's voice, Jennifer Jason Leigh. And it's a different voice, and he's running around the hotel rooms. He's trying to find this woman. So he finds her. He and she's with a mate, and they're there to see his presentation the next day, where he's going to be talking about customer service, one of the most boring things ever. This is a guy who is just so bored with life. He's bored with his family life. He's bored with his own life. He's bored with the life of working and staying in hotels. So it's all about this guy trying to form a relationship with Lisa, this different voice. He's already in love with her. This voice has captivated him. And it was just such an emotional movie. Like, I was watching these puppets. The puppets got intimate. They got intimate physically, sexually. And I found myself getting a bit emotional. And that's something very difficult to do in a cinema. So I could just feel a wee tear in my eye. So there's one point where he's like, he can't believe it. He gets to hear this new voice. And it's almost like he's discovered a new song for the first time. And he's telling this one, oh, let me hear you sing. And she starts singing, and you'll love this, as you mentioned, you love this kind of movie. She starts singing, Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
Right.
And she says, there's the line in Girls Just Want to Have Fun, I want to be the one that walks in the sun. She goes, that line sums up how I want my life to be. And that line stuck with me so much. I was like, that is what we want to do. Like, whether it's surrounding ourselves with people that illuminate our lives, it's whether it's seeking out exciting opportunities like doing a podcast where it gives me a chance to talk about things I love with people that I really enjoy hanging around with. Everything, and she's right. I just want to be the one that walks in the sun. You know, there's so much to take from that movie, and it really is a fantastic insight into mental health, and it's done in a way that could be a total disaster. To deal with mental health is something that is still a stigma, sadly, for a lot of people, and to do it with puppets could easily come across as, Jesus, are they for real? But it works so, so well. The vocal performances, the technical work, the use of music, it's such a film that really sticks with you. And I really think it's going to be an iconic and classic movie. And I mean, it didn't really get much traction. I think it was in the cinema for 2 weeks here. And I had to see it twice in that time. I was like, I can't risk never seeing this film again. And I think I spent the other 2 weeks telling everyone, go to the cinema, you got to see this film, you got to see this film. So it's been really quite an exciting opportunity to see this film. And I really hope people listen to this podcast and seek out Anomalisa. Because it really is a unique film that, while I love movies like Captain America, as much as you as anyone, I go to the cinema to find movies like Anomalisa, Everybody Wants Some, where it's almost acts like a personal therapy for me, where I can sit down and I can draw parallels with my life. I can watch and go, you know what, that reminds me of my life. That reminds me of someone that was special to me. That reminds me of an incident in my life where I'm still dealing with it and challenging what that event meant. And movies like that resonate with me more than all the Captain Americas or Star Treks that I spend months of the year thinking about getting excited for. It's finding these gems like Anomalisa, Everybody Wants Some, Eye in the Sky that challenge me, push me, make me think about things and where I don't know where they're going to go. So I really hope people seek out Anomalisa or any of the movies that were on my list.
Yeah, I can totally see that. I mean, you know, I do tend to be more blockbuster oriented because that's what comes out here. I mean, yeah. it's really hard to track down these things that are niche.
Yeah.
But both 2014 and 2015, my number ones were things that I had no idea were going to be my number one. They certainly weren't my number one most anticipated. So there's a very good chance by the time we get to end of 2016, Civil War is no longer number one, even though I loved it. And that's the fun of going throughout the year and picking up on new things. Speaking of picking up on new things, so now that we've covered the first half mostly of 2016, what are you looking forward to most in the back end of the year, Lee?
Yeah, for example, obviously I can't wait for Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, me too.
Good, bad, whatever. A new Star Trek movie is always something I'm most excited to see. There's a movie, I'm looking forward to the new Jason Bourne movie.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to a movie called Sing Street. It comes out next week. It is from
That's the Irish one, right?
Yeah. Once is one of my favorite movies ever. It's an Irish love story, and I'd avoided all of the trailers and only really seen the posters for that. But in the cinema yesterday, before everyone saw the trailer was on, and I was like, okay, I finally got to recognize it before I go see it. And I was watching it, and I was like, oh my, I can't wait for this movie. It looks really like it's in the similar vein of Once, but a lot more comedic. It's basically about this young boy that meets this attractive girl. He convinces her that he wants her to be in his music video so that he can spend some time with her. And the thing is, he doesn't have a band, so he's got to form a band to get them together so that he can make a music video with this girl. So I'm really excited for that. So that would probably be the more kind of imminent movies that I'm really looking forward to seeing. Obviously, there's always things across the year that things like Anomalisa that I had no idea were really coming out or was on the horizon. So when it came out, I was really taken away by it. Obviously, things like Rogue One, can't wait for that. Snowden I'm really looking forward to. An Oliver Stone conspiracy movie is always something to get me excited about. I think the BFG will be interesting. I think Suicide Squad could be fascinating.
That has the potential to go either way. Now, I will admit, even as a hardcore Marvel guy, watching the Suicide Squad trailer that's before Civil War, you probably got it at some point too.
Yeah.
That looks like it could be fun.
Yeah.
I do feel like they're trying to go for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of pressure on this movie. And I think as a part of the DC film process, I think it's going to be interesting regardless of the quality. We can only have to look at Batman v Superman to see how much debate and excitement that's created around the geek community, discussing it positively and negatively. So I think Suicide Squad will be fascinating. And finally, I can't wait to see The Nice Guys, the new Shane Black movie.
Yeah, I was going to talk about that too, because that comes out next week here in America.
Yeah, I think it's the end of the month here as well. So I can't wait to see that. It looks so funny.
Yeah, it looks fun. And it looks like Shane Black going back to his Lethal Weapon / Kiss Kiss Bang Bang kind of fun. And it's set in the 70s, which I'm always up for. And the trailers have looked fun, so I'm looking forward to that.
Exactly.
One
and even what was it called that I'm really looking forward to seeing again? Elvis Nixon. Always any movie that's got Kevin Spacey in the White House.
I'm sure Tristan agrees with you there.
Oh yeah.
For me, it's stuff that you mentioned. I hope for the best for Star Trek Beyond. I think that I'm hoping that they haven't shown us anything yet. I mean, the trailer came out in December. A lot of people hated it. I didn't mind it. Mm-hmm. The new trailer comes out this Friday. Hopefully it's more classic oriented like Simon Pegg has suggested.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that. Of course, you know, Marvel fan for life. I'm looking forward to Doctor Strange, seeing what they could do with something different. Because, I mean, yes, it borrows elements from other films, obviously, but it doesn't look like any Marvel film I've seen up to this point. So it looks like it could be fascinating. You know, along with Marvel, I'm a Pixar fan, so I'm looking forward to see what they can do with Finding Dory. When they held something called CinemaCon here in America, they showed the first half an hour.
Oh, really?
Finding Dory, and it got rave reviews, so I'm hoping that's a good sign. Rogue One, like you said, the trailer looks interesting. It looks fantastic. My two left field ones that I think could have potential, and it's mostly because I like the cast that's in it. One is The Girl on the Train. I saw thriller and that trailer, and I love Emily Blunt. I know Rebecca Ferguson from Rogue Nation is in it.
Stole the show.
And the premise looks interesting. Some people have called it, like, you know, second-rate Gone Girl, but I think that they could elevate the material. I really do.
That's good.
One movie that hasn't had a trailer yet, but the premise sounds interesting and the cast sounds interesting, is this Passengers movie. And this is the one with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love Chris Pratt ever since he, you know, made his big elevation to stardom. Yeah. I think he's on a roll. And Jennifer Lawrence, I know, is a divisive person at this point because she's been everywhere. But I think – I've always loved her. And I think she shines the most in original dramas. And this being an original sci-fi drama, I think really has potential for her to let loose that Silver Linings Playbook, American Hustle shine that I've grown to love her for. So I'm waiting to see a trailer for that one. But the sci-fi premise and the two leads have sold me. So I'm looking forward to see how that one turns out.
Awesome. That sounds like we've got a lot to look forward to and probably discuss on the horizon as well.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be an exciting year, and hopefully, you know, the level of quality that we've gotten so far from the first half of 2016 goes throughout the whole year.
Awesome. So has there been any honorable mentions for you that you'd like to put in before we go?
Not really. Like I said, I've seen so few films, but what about you? You've seen way more than I do. I think it's better with your list.
Yeah. Let me go through my list of what I've seen this year that I would rack off as really good. Creed, you and Tristan did a great job talking about that. What's called The Bigger Splash, Ralph Fiennes. It's a really fantastic European thriller, black comedy. I highly recommend that. The Witch, oh my God, that was so close to making it my top five.
I've heard so many different things about that one.
You would love it. The most scary goat you'll ever see. Midnight Special was a huge disappointment, sadly. Green Room, I think you would love that. Patrick Stewart is a southern neo-Nazi taking on Anton Yelchin in a punk rock band. Really bonkers. It loses its way a bit towards the end, but I highly recommend seeing it just for Patrick Stewart alone.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Lee, for stepping in again last minute. I think we managed to make a pretty good show out of this one.
Oh, yeah.
And what are your guys' favorites so far of 2016? Let us know. Contact us on Twitter. We have a general Nerd Party Twitter now at Join Nerd Party. And you can reach Lee and I individually as well. I'm at mhanson0207. Where are you, Lee?
You can get me at Lee_Nostromo if you want to tell me that High Rise is the best film of the year and Tristan is completely wrong. I cannot wait to see that, retweet that, screen cap that, and send it to him all hours of the day.
He's going to love you so much after this episode. But thank you so much for joining us on the first half of 2016 recap. And until next time, Lee and I will see you at the cinema.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.